You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom, first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by PronkPops.wordpress.com and KDUXWebRadio.wordpress.com. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. Welcome to the Pronk Pop Show. This is the Monday edition. Many of you probably already have voted. The voters have come out across the country early, and many of them are Republicans, many are Democrats. I'm not trying to predict how it went, but that's encouraging. You need more and more people to come out. And I say it's encouraging because I think that many voters are going to stay home. So why overall, both early voting and people voting on tomorrow on Election Day should be one of the highest we've had in our history in terms of a midterm election. I don't think it will hit what you normally see on a presidential election, which is usually north of 120 million. But it might get fairly close. Americans are paying attention. What are they paying attention to? What is their key issues? I don't think this election is going to be any different than past elections. Inevitably, people vote their pocketbooks. Now, when you're in a growing economy, which we have been now going on 97 months, only a relatively small percentage, I think entirely too many, are still unemployed. And they definitely will vote their pocketbook. But there's been significant tax changes, and most people benefit. But in some states, especially where real estate taxes, for example, are high and people in the past could get a deduction, won't. I think you're going to see some negative reaction against the Republicans in that area. You know, that will not surprise me. What is apparent, and it's been apparent for many years, we have a blue coast, and I don't know, at one time they switched the colors. I always thought that blue should be the Republican Party and red should be the Democratic Party, and at one time it was, and then they switched. So today Republicans are identified with red. And I do think they're overall, not just the congressional elections, but also state houses, governorships, there is a continuing of the red wave rising. In other words, Republicans are winning. Not all. There's definitely going to be some Democratic governors elected, some Republican governors elected, and some of them will be flips in the sense of a change in party. But the general trend has been more and more Republicans are winning. Now, there's always a limit to this. And if you look at counties, for example, that are primarily Democratic, they're on the East and West Coast. The central part of the country, especially in the South, but you know, Texas on up and through the South, are predominantly Republican. And I don't see that changing. You're going to see occasionally a district or a county be blue or Democratic. And again, that's usually been the case, though, for many, many years. So we have very much. If you look at a colored map, and I'll probably put one up showing the results Wednesday. There won't be a show, by the way, Tuesday, because all the radio shows have been preempted. And this, since it's the first Tuesday of November, the Dallas County Community College District has their board of directors meeting. So my show, together with a lot of others, are preempted. And then we have evening coverage of the election. I won't be doing that. So I'll save my comments for Wednesday. I think the status quo will remain. If you want my overall prediction is little hope and little change. The status quo will remain. And why do I say that? And I pointed this out several times on the show, but I'll point it out again. Many people think the Republican Party is a conservative party. Well, I think that's almost never, if never, been true. It's more of a slightly left to center to heavily moderate. In other words, there's always been a liberal progressive wing or section of the Republican Party. Yes, there have been classical liberals, libertarians, conservatives in the Republican Party, and we've had Barry Goldwater and Ronald Reagan run for president that would consider themselves conservative and or libertarian. And I don't want to get into the fine distinctions, but someone that believes in limited government, and those are usually classical liberals, are very close to the libertarian position. There are differences. But what has been the problem? And why has the Republican Party not been a conservative party? Encourage people to do this. Go to Congressional Review, and they have a scorecard. It's from letter grades A, B, C, D, F, and from 100 at the top to 0 at the bottom. Now, given its conservative review, if you get a score of 100 or between 90 and 100, you're considered an A in terms of conservative review. They're conservatives. You would expect that. And a B from 80 to 90. Well, there are less than 100 representatives, both in the House and in the Senate, that are A and B Republicans. If you add C, you might get up to 100. Most of the C's I would consider moderate. That's where I'd put them. It's clear to me that those that advocate for limited government, financial responsibility, balanced budgets, non-intervention not only in the United States economy but abroad, they simply don't have the votes. And I include myself in that group, but I'm not a Republican. I consider myself an independent, and you might say I'm a purist, but that's not really true. I think you should vote your political philosophy, whatever it is. What's discouraging is I didn't have candidates to vote for. I really didn't. I didn't have someone that was truly for limited government. And Texas is a red state. I think it will remain a red state, no matter what you've heard. Yes, there's parts of Texas, especially southern Texas in the Valley, that's always been Democrat and has voted Democrat. And even Lyndon Baines Johnson, I think he owes his big win in the Senate because of some hanky-panky in the voting. But that's ancient history. Texas is definitely red, but I think as more and more illegals break into the country, settle in the country, and I think eventually will get citizenship. That's simply the goal of the Democratic Party. They need to replace their voter base, so they will not budge on this. They want citizenship. Now, they might call it amnesty or pathway to citizenship. That's clearly their agenda, and the reason is not so much they really care about the illegal aliens. What they care about is winning and getting power and keeping power. So as more illegal aliens, as well as legal immigrants to this country, are in Texas, Texas will gradually turn purple and maybe even blue. Remember, before, Texas has always been considered part of the South. So it was Democrat at one time, and then it definitely switched over, first in cities and then in counties and then in states. So today, why it is still solid Republican, that will switch, especially if the invasion of this country by illegals continues. So I think Texas and Florida, the Senate seat by Cruz, I think it could be a squeaker, but I really don't. I think he's popular enough that he will get a second term. And why I'm on terms, I'm a firm believer in term limits, that 12 years in the House, 12 years in the Senate, up and out, because I think you need new blood. What I don't like, and many independents don't like, but there are also Republicans don't like, is when someone stays for a long, long time, beyond 12 years. And we have people that have been there way beyond 12 years, and especially in leadership, because what it rewards is seniority and people that have been there a long time. And this is both the Democratic Party and the Republican Party. Now, you are getting more and more retirements. And a lot of Republicans that, frankly, didn't like Trump, don't trust Trump, decided to go back home. Fine with me. But keep in mind that the Republican Party is not a conservative, a libertarian, classical liberal, limited government party. Far from it. And that is very much the challenge and the problem. Because if you go to Conservative Review, check out your own congressmen and senators so you get a feel to how the rankings go. Then look at the leadership, both of the Democratic Party and the Republican Party. Most of the leadership of the Democratic Party are between 0 and 30. Solid F. They're very much for big government. That is their philosophy. They want to grow government, shrink the private sector, take over large parts of the private sector, such as the healthcare industry. They're for heavy regulation. They're interventionists, both in the U.S. economy and abroad. That's what they're about. There's not a problem that they don't think cannot be solved by a new law, a new regulation, a new federal department. And there's really no limits in terms or constraints in terms of government spending. And they have not changed their tune. If anything, the Democratic Party is going further and further to the left and dragging along not only many Democrats that, let us say, are moderate to liberal. The way I view the Democratic Party, it was you had a progressive wing that became a liberal wing, changed its name back to progressive, and now is going for socialists / communists. It's moving further and further to the left, and there is going to be a battle for the control of the Democratic Party, and the same for the Republican Party. And to the extent that the Democratic Party goes further to the left, in other words, they want more intervention into the economy, more regulation, obviously more spending, they're moving away from their voter base. That's why it's essential for them to get as many illegal aliens that are in the country, making sure they get citizenship. And the calculation is they'll get, in terms of votes, if they all get citizenship, I would say a minimum of 2 out of 3 will vote Democrat and will agree with the government. I call it Santa Claus socialism. That's what they favor, and the way they get votes is vote for me and I'll give you free stuff. You've heard it from Bernie Sanders. Free college, free food, free medical care. There's no concern at all for how are you going to pay for it? Well, we'll either borrow it or tax the rich. That's their mantra. They could care less how they come up with the money. And do they really care about the national debt or unfunded liabilities obligation? The answer is no. So that if they cannot increase taxes, what they will do is increase debt. And unfortunately, this attitude is also the attitude of the Republican Party. See, what usually amazes people, because people in a district, usually part of a county, are very loyal to their Congress, their representative, as well as senators. And that's why there's that incumbent advantage. Incumbents usually win. Rarely do the incumbents lose. And when they lose, it's usually because they have not been successful in focusing on the concerns of the people in their district. And that's why I think a lot of Republicans that are still registered Republicans might not come out tomorrow. Now, why? They wanted the total, complete repeal of Obamacare. That has not been done. And what I mean by total repeal, I mean the law, the regulations, the subsidies, the mandates, everything. And go back to the old system where, and the old system in many ways is still the current system. People predominantly get their health care through their employer, whatever their employer offers, especially with larger firms, but even with small firms. It's rare, well, it's not totally rare. You do get employers' businesses. Usually they're new. They're startups or they've just started doing business. And I used to be in this business, and I know this. After they've been in business a couple of years, usually 2 or 3 minimum, and they see this is a going concern, successful business, they're making money, one of the first things they will offer to their employees, because many of the owners are employees too, is a comprehensive health insurance plan. That's very, very common. And then the second thing they usually offer is what? A retirement plan, some type of retirement plan. Now, why do they do it? Do they do it out of the kindness of their heart? No, they have to compete with other employers in the labor market. And they know when they interview someone, they should explain, if they have one, they will. Here's what we offer in terms of health insurance plan. Here's what we offer in terms of a retirement plan. If they don't, usually, not all the people I interview, but some of the people will ask about it, and if they don't get the right answer, even though you might want them, and they might be willing to go to work for your company at the salary or hourly wage, if they're competing with, and they usually are, with several employers, most people will go with the company that not only offers a good salary, and working conditions are important, but more important is, especially if they have children, is, especially young children, are the benefits. The way I used to call it, the total compensation package. And most future employees, that's what they look at. So if they're looking for a job, and if you're in a market where it's hard to find people, and the pendulum is definitely swung from a buyer's market, or where the employer says it's more or less take or leave it. Here's what I have to offer. If that doesn't meet your needs, sorry. But now with more and more people working, and as you return to not only a growing economy, but a booming economy, employers are going to have to definitely compete. In other words, offer their existing employees and any future employees a good to excellent health insurance plan and retirement plan. I bring that up because the move by the Democratic Party, and I don't think this is going to be successful, is they're trying to expand Medicare to all people. That's why this is just single payer or socialized medicine writ large. They call it Medicare for all. I don't think that's going anywhere. And I think President Trump, let's say he even got a bill. I don't think he'll ever get a bill. But if he got a bill, he's going to veto it. Because most of the people that are working today, especially with and most of the employers offer something, they like what they have. It doesn't mean it's the best plan or the excellent plan, but it's satisfactory. If it wasn't, just like if a person thinks he's worth more, you're only worth what someone's willing to pay. Well, if someone, what would you do? Let's say you're happy where you're at, the pay is okay, but there's no retirement plan, no employee benefits, and someone calls you up, and this has happened to me many times. You know, we've heard, you got a good reputation, you're well known, would like you to come to work with us, please interview, and then they're going to tell you, or you might ask, what the salary range is or what they can offer. If they're interviewing, they like you, they're going to make you an offer. Now, just if it's a lot more money, people are obviously going to move. But let's say it's either the same money or fairly close to it, but either above or below, but they're offering a retirement plan and a health insurance plan. The majority of the time, I'd say 80 to 90% of the time, the person's going to leave, or his current employer may, but seldom do, offer a similar health plan. They're not going to do it for one person. Depends on the size of it's very sensitive to how long the business or the employer has been in operation, whether they're successful or not, and also the size. Now, I bring all this up because one of the key issues in this election is healthcare. The Democratic Party tried to make healthcare the issue, and what not all, but some were advocating, is to expand Medicare. Well, the people that, there are two groups of people, the majority of people have good to excellent coverage. They don't want that. They certainly don't want to be forced onto Medicare. And then you have the people that are on Medicare. They don't want their benefits diluted in any way. Even though health care is an important issue and it's not going away, it's not a determining issue. If anything, it's very divisive, and we've already went through Obamacare, and the people didn't like it. Why? It's the government specifying exactly what the plan has to have, and when they did that, it made it very, very expensive, so the premiums were high, and together, not only with the premiums, the deductibles were high. Now, I'm not making this show about health insurance, but health insurance, Medicare, in other words, when you're sick or injured, who's going to pay the lion's share share the bill. It's usually the insurance company's going to pay the bill. But who funds that? It's the employer. It's not the government. So I don't think the American people, they've already been burned with Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act. They're not going to go along with this. So you're going to have not only most, if not all, the Republicans be against it, but you're going to have Democrats against it. Now, you do have employers that would rather, if they had their druthers, would rather the government take it on. Then they don't have to mess with it. And there are businesses, employers out there that's their attitude. One less thing that I have to worry about and fund. Other companies, like I say, are proactive and use the benefit package to attract and retain people. So the economy, jobs, healthcare are definitely the issues, and voters will respond accordingly. And I think the Republicans, especially those in the House and the Senate, they trip themselves up. And what I mean by that, their voter base, the Republican voter base, expected the full and complete repeal of Obamacare, and that didn't happen. And the Democrats have come back and said, well, we don't want to repeal it or replace it. We want to, and this has always been the plan, we want to go to a single-payer system. The Democratic Party plan, especially the liberals, the progressives, the socialists, the big, definitely the big government types, they always wanted single-payer, including Barack Obama. But they didn't have the votes. That's why I always emphasize, you got to have the votes. What you want is one thing. What you have the votes for to get passed, you got to pass it into law. So if the Democrats capture the House, and they're highly confident, especially if you listen to Nancy Pelosi, that they're going to win the House back, and she's going to become Speaker, and she makes sure that the number one issue is going to be health care. So that's what they'll be talking about, and they're big government Republicans. I call them the DNF Republicans. There are enough of them, combined with the Democrats, that we might even get single-payer. That would be a big mistake. And then the next question I have, let's say they do get single-payer, are they going to outlaw insurance plans, health insurance plans? I think that would be not only a bridge too far. There are just too many people that are satisfied or like their health insurance plan if the employer is paying for it. You better believe they like it. So you have competition. What you really need is maximum competition. The last thing you want, the unintended consequence of voting Democrat, is you lose benefits that you already have because the Democratic Party wants to go to a single-payer socialized medicine type plan. I think that would cause a dramatic shift in the Democratic Party. I think the majority of them now though want single-payer or a slightly improved Affordable Care Act. The problem with the Affordable Care Act, and for that matter, Medicare for All, is the price tag. Because if your employer wasn't paying for it and you had to buy it, and that's sort of the third group. There are people out here that are either sole proprietorships, own small companies, have to go to the individual market. And that truly is where pre-existing conditions comes in. The way to solve the pre-existing condition problem is enable individuals that don't have an employer paying for it to join a large association. And what I'm talking about, folks, if you work for a large employer, you've never had to fill out a questionnaire when you signed up for your health insurance. But if you're an individual, it's individually underwritten. In other words, they're going to ask you questions, and if you have a serious pre-existing conditions such as heart disease, stroke, cancer, you're not going to get it. And in some other conditions is not as serious, it might be rated up. So pre-existing conditions is really not an issue for employers that offer it as a group or if you can get it through an association. You see, I view the pre-existing condition issue that we over-focus on is there's solutions to that, and the obvious one is if you're an individual, don't buy it as an individual. Now, if you have the money or that's what you would prefer, definitely do it. Do it when you're healthy. But let's say you can't do it because you're not healthy, then join an association. And I think Senator Rand Paul wanted to do this. There are people, Republicans for sure, in the House and the Senate would do this. It's just an obvious way to deal with that issue. So healthcare is definitely a big issue and remain a big issue. But number one is, do you have a job? And how does it look for your industry? You know, you might have a job now, but if we are thrown into a recession, what happens? You start seeing layoffs. Many employers will lay people off. That's what happens in a recession. So people that don't have jobs, that are still looking for jobs, the employment situation is very important, and whether or not the economy is growing. Well, we're going in the right direction in that regard. It looks like economic growth is going up, hopefully above the trend line of roughly 3 to 3.5%. And if that happens, the unemployment rate goes down, whether you look at U3, the headline number, which is the one you see on TV or hear on the radio, or whether you look at a more comprehensive measure of unemployment, the U6, both of them going down. And I think, for example, I think the U3 could get below 3%. I don't think it's ever going to be below 2, but it could get below 3%. And your U6 rate is about double the U3 rate. So let's take what close to almost the best case. Let's say you could get to an unemployment rate, in my mind, of about 2.5%. And the U6 rate's usually about double, so that would be 5%. Most economists, most people would consider that near full employment. It has happened in the past, but rarely. In the past, I mean last century. In the 50s. But if you have the right economic policies, in other words, significantly what we need is tax reform, tax cuts. The Democratic Party is not going to give you that. And unfortunately, the Republicans made the mistake of not going far enough. So if they lose control of the House, they're going to have to wait at least 2 years, maybe longer, before they have an opportunity to do it. Now, keep in mind that the DNF Republicans way outnumber the A, B, and C Republicans. That's just the facts. There are more DNF Republicans that are closer to Democrats. The leadership predominantly in the Republican Party is DNF. So they'll cut deals with the ones they're closest to, and that, unfortunately, is the Democratic Party. What's going to determine votes? I think our vote is impressed so far with what the economy has been doing under Trump. The answer is yes, and that's driving Democrats and big lie media crazy. Because if the economy continues to improve, and that's not guaranteed at all. I think at best it's 50-50. And if the House does become controlled by the Democrats, they're not going to, except in some areas where the DNF Republicans can agree with predominantly F Democrats. For example, you already hear it, infrastructure, roads, bridges, buildings, whatever. We'll have another building boom. We'll spend and spend and spend more money. Now, they're not going to call it that. They'll call that investment in the future. And I'm not against the government being involved in this, but I primarily think it's a state and county function, not a federal government function. But it would not surprise me if the area of agreement will be, you know, highways, roads, funds to replace infrastructure that are near falling down, dangerous. I think that's one area that doesn't surprise me at all. And even if the Republicans were in charge, there would be Democrats that would go for that. Then the big issue that really divides the country today, that is the illegal alien invasion by at least 30, upwards of 60 million people. No one really knows the number. And the government probably does, but is not letting on. It's not 11 or 12 million. And this is where, if the Democrats don't play this right, could lose big in 2020. Because here, it doesn't matter if you're Democrat, Republican, or Independent. The people want the illegal alien invasion stopped. In other words, what they're asking for is the law to be enforced. And if it turns out, now I'm not overly concerned about this yet because Donald Trump has at least 2 more years and he's largely responsible with the implementation and enforcement of law. He is the chief law enforcement officer. But then you get up into money, and this is something to keep in mind, especially if you're going to vote. Donald Trump is president of the United States today because it made it very clear as a candidate, first to get the nomination and then to win the presidency, that he was going to build a big, beautiful wall with a door in it. Step one, and step two, he was going to deport and remove all the illegal aliens that are here, although he quickly said they can come back. Well, most of the American people, and I would say 70 75 to 80% want immigration law enforced. In other words, if you're here as an illegal alien, you should be deported and removed to your country of origin. And if anything, I think that number will go up. And that's where the ruling class, Democrats and Republicans, leadership of both parties, are fundamentally at odds with who? Their own voter base. You see, let's say the Democrats get control of the House. It could happen. I think that you're going to have many, many close races that can go either way. Now, the conventional wisdom is the Democrats will win, and I can see that. But there are going to be some very close races. And then I think you're going to see the revenge of some Republicans and independents on their elected representatives for not building the wall or repealing health care. So I think you're going to see some surprises in that area. Who? I don't know. I think it would be long-term serving House of representatives, and even senators. So my crystal ball is not any better than yours. I'm not voting. I don't have anyone I really want to vote for. There is certainly no classical liberal party. In Europe, see, the terminology is important to keep straight. In Europe and in the United Kingdom, a liberal is what I'm calling a classical liberal. They're just the opposite of what we call liberal today. And that's what confuses a lot of people. Yeah, I'm a liberal in the European sense, but to make it very clear, since I'm in the United States, I'm a classical liberal. I want the size, the scope of the federal government, about half of what it is now. I want it limited. It's just too big. It's taking on, and this gets to the core question, what is the role of the federal government? What's the role of government anywhere? Most will agree it's enforcement of the law, the police function, and second is the defense of the nation against invaders, other countries' military. And then you'll get in an argument, well, what other things should they do? Well, we should have a State Department to handle diplomacy with other nations. We should have a Justice Department to enforce the law, a Defense Department to supervise, defend the country. I'm for a strong national defense. Where I part company is when we go overboard, and we have, and decide to take on the role of policemen of the world. And when we do that, we invade other countries. Call it what you want. We intervene in other countries. And that has caused a lot of resentment around the world. People don't like foreigners where we're the foreigners in their country, even under the best of circumstances, and that usually leads to Americans being killed abroad through explosive devices. Use your imagination. So I'm a non-interventionist that wants a strong national defense, and the only time to use it is when the president goes to Congress and asks for a declaration of war. There's a debate, and he gets it. Now, there's no set language as to what that declaration of war is. My point is the best way to keeping your sons and daughters home and not getting killed abroad is to be very, very careful when you're going to commit U.S. troops in a foreign country, because that will lead to conflict, fighting, and a war. We might not declare it, but that's what's been going on ever since World War II. The last time we declared war was World War II, right after Pearl Harbor. But the United States has been in dozens of countries, still is. And that's the result of an interventionist foreign policy. Some would call it an imperial foreign policy, but that's what we've become. We were and should be a constitutional representative republic. What we are today is a constitutional empire. And I don't see that changing anytime soon. Even though I'm for a strong national defense, there's a fine line. And the more money you appropriate, authorize and appropriate for the military, and I'm for having a very modern, state-of-the-art, standing armies, Marines, as long as they're only used in situations where the Congress has declared war. I'm in a minority, because both under Democrats and under Republicans, presidents, they seldom ask for a declaration of war. They don't even call it that. Now, some will ask for an authorization of military spending, and you can consider that the next best thing. It's sort of like a proxy for it. But I think we should stick to the Constitution, because the Founding Fathers were right. If you let it up to the president, the bias there is to intervene, and that leads to wars abroad. and the loss of lives, many wounded, and spending a lot of money for many, many years. That's why we have such a large national debt. Now, there's several other reasons, but military spending, expenditures, is a large piece of that, as it is for the government pensions that are owed. See, what the government does, they still have the draft, although they haven't used it. You go abroad, 1, 2, 3, 4, how many tours, but then you get closer to qualifying for a pension, like 18 years, 18 to 20 year time. They're trying to get rid of you. They don't want to pay you those retirement benefits. Now, many people make it a career. I didn't. I was in the military for 5 years in the Air Force, but after 5 years, I decided to return to the private sector. And most Americans that go in the military, and that's still today a very small minority, keep that in mind, have served in any either as regular, I was regular Air Force or reserves in the reserve. That's a small portion. And of those that do, only a small portion stay in for 20 or 30 years. Usually they get out sometime between 20 and 30 years, but you'll have the federal government trying to push you out early. And that's understandable, but that happens. Talk to some veterans, they'll tell you. That's why I'm for, one of the things is term limits. I think both our representatives, senators, that each, the maximum they could serve is 12 years. Then go home and either the private sector, whatever you want to do, or if you want to run for president, you're welcome to do it. Do I think that the current people in Washington are going to pass term limits? No, I don't, because that affects them. Because most of the leadership in the Democratic Party and the Republican Party have been there for a very long time, definitely above 12 years. Most have been there 18 to 24 or 18 to 30 years. And it shows. Just look at the pictures. A lot of gray hair and a lot of, let's say, overweight people. Now, I'm not saying all people that have been there a long time have gray hair or overweight, but many, many do. They need to go back home, be productive. Go into business, whatever your skill set is. Many of them are lawyers. They can practice law. They're doctors, dentists. They can do that. But I like the up or out policy. Stay in Congress for 6 terms, 12 years, then go home and not be forced to go home. Ideally, I would not like to have term limits, but that's the only way you're going to ensure that the leadership has been there for 24, 30, 36 years. Just look at them. Most have been there. I've been looking at it. It seems about the 14 to 16 year period. The ones that are staying, the career ladder is you stay. You got to be there quite a while, and then you might get a committee chairman if you go along with the leadership of the party, whether it's Democrat or Republican. A lot of politics, and that's what they want to be. And when it looks like either party is going to nominate for the foreseeable future, that's when you get people retiring. And many Republicans retired this time. So I'll let you decide who you're going to vote for. I'm staying home. I no longer have a political party. I voted primarily Republican, primarily, not entirely, up until 2006. And then I threw up my hands. I said, in terms of total spending, it doesn't matter if you put in a Democrat or Republican. The debt keeps going higher, higher, and higher. And so do, and most of the attention is focused on two things, the size of the national debt and annual budget deficits, where the federal government spends a lot more money than they collect in total taxes. And this fiscal year that we're in, this is not total spending. The size of the deficit will be over $1,000 billion. And I will say, it doesn't matter whether it's a Democrat or a Republican. And unless the president party controls the House and the Senate, and even if he does, the House and the Senate will determine what the authorization and appropriation is. So like I say, presidents can propose balanced budgets, but that doesn't mean the House of Representatives and the Senate are going to approve it. The only reason I go on and on about this situation is definitely not sustainable. And there will be a day of reckoning, and it will be in the 2020s, and I think sooner rather than later. While I hope the Republicans maintain their control of the Senate, I think they will in the Senate probably pick up 3 or 4 seats. I think they could get as high as 56. I don't think they're going to get any higher. But that's a nice majority. And the Democrats will get 44. But the voters will decide that. So the Republican Party should control the Senate. And that's good, because that means whoever President Trump nominates to be not only Supreme Court justices, but other court judges will be approved. But then we get into, and I'm running out of time, so I'm going to definitely wrap it up. I didn't vote for Donald Trump because I don't trust him, and I don't think he'll build the wall, and I don't think he'll deport the illegal alien. And I'm watching him like a hawk. If the Republicans maintain control, then the issue that he has to deal with is to get the $25 billion minimum, it could be as high as $30 billion, and at one time, really in 1 year, build that wall. That's if the Republican Party maintains control of the House and the Senate. And the House is not looking good. I don't believe the polls, and rarely. Occasionally, the ones that are more reliable, I will. For example, I like Rasmussen, and if he has one out, I usually, not all the time, but sometimes go over it. But if what I'm hearing from the Democratic pollsters, that the House will be under the control of the Democratic Party, probably with the House Speaker being Nancy Pelosi, but other people could run. Keep that in mind. But if that happens, you're not going to see any money for the wall. In other words, that is a campaign promise that was not kept. And the Republicans, for the first 2 years, controlled the House and the Senate and the presidency, but didn't deliver on their major promise. Now, after saying that, if the Democrats capture or regain control of the House, this is a perfect excuse, and I consider it an excuse, for President Trump to say the reason I have not built the wall is the Democrats won't propose a penny. They won't give me any money to build the wall. They're adamantly opposed. So until the Republicans regain the House by, I would say, significant margins, I can't build the wall. That's why you need to reelect me in 2020, not only me, but senators and representatives that support my policies. So what I, deep in my gut, I suspect we're going to have gridlock where the Senate is controlled by the Republicans and the House controlled by the Democrats. But even if it goes the other way, where the Republicans, and that's what I'm hoping, that's why I think a red wave is breaking. Let's say that happens. That doesn't mean the leadership of the House or the Senate are going to provide funds to President Trump, even though he's a Republican, to build a big, beautiful wall. See, my question to President Trump is, how many miles of that big, beautiful wall have been built? The answer is nearly none. It's not none, but it's nearly none. So his main issue, primary issue that he promised to do, building the wall, remember, it's a two-point promise, first to build the big, beautiful wall, then to deport and remove all the illegal aliens that are here. Now, the second part he can deal with and should deal with, but have you heard any news reports of 1 million, 2 million, 3 million illegal aliens being deported each year? I haven't heard it. The emphasis by President Trump is all the, what he calls, criminal illegal aliens that have major felonies. Well, everyone wants those out. That's a popular issue. But where the rubber meets the road is where you're deporting, and you should be deporting, at least 2 to 3 million. I would say 3 million a year. Because if it were, let's say the estimate, the range of the estimate is between 30 million and 60 million. Let's say it's 30 million. At 3 million a year, it's going to take you 10 years. If it's 60 million, it's going to take you 20 years. So Donald Trump has a challenge. If the Democratic Party wins, he could use that to run against the Democratic Party that's controlling the House. You know, vote for me and I'll get elected a Republican representative that will be on board with my policies. But keep in mind, even if the Republicans keep control, the majority of the leadership are DNF Republicans. They are closer to who? Democrats. They won't build the wall either. I'm not saying this is easy, folks. But if you're going to make the promise, and Donald Trump made the promise when he was a candidate, to build the wall and deport all the illegal aliens, he's not fulfilled that promise. Now, there are reasons. I understand them, explanations for it. But we want a leader that leads the party. And on its number one issue that got him elected, you should be real, let's say, bang heads, however you want to describe it, to make sure that senators and representatives go along with one of the top three or four issues that you ran on. So why President Trump has delivered, especially on the economy, cutting regulations, cutting taxes, in turn have meant lower unemployment rates and now starting to rise the labor participation rate, which we want. We want to get it ultimately over 67%, but definitely in the neighborhood of 66 and 67%. Why? That means tens of millions of Americans that either have part-time jobs or no job can come and will come back to the labor force. So it's an important election, but most likely it's going to be gridlocked for 2 years. And I frankly don't see much cooperation. Maybe in the infrastructure area, but that's about it. I don't think you're going to see fundamental tax reform, no money for the wall, and they probably will be investigating them. At least the House will. Am I optimistic? No, because it's called the two-party tyranny. The status quo will remain. So if you're for limited government, for term limits, for repeal of Obamacare, for a strong national defense, and that includes building the wall, much of what you want is not going to happen because both the Democratic Party and the leadership of the Republican Party, both of them have something in common. They're D and F. Their score is D or F, below 70 on conservative review. Most of the leadership of both parties is between 0 and 40. That's why I'm not optimistic. We need a new viable political party, a successful one that has slates of candidates in if initially not every state, but in many states, as well as nationally. It's not happening this year. I don't see it happening in 2020. And the reason I always emphasize this, let's say you agree with me. Government is entirely too big. They're taking too much resources out of the private sector, and that's exactly what they're doing. And you want a party and a candidate that, first of all, wants to downsize the federal government by shutting down at least 8 federal departments. Well, the Democratic Party's not that party. They want to grow the government. They want to make it bigger and bigger. They don't want to downsize anything. And as far as department and agencies, they want to increase their budget and maybe even go and create one or two more. So the Democratic Party is not a place for anyone that considers themselves a classical liberal, believes in limited government, believes in a free enterprise competitive market system under a representative republic and a constitution. So this election, you're going to see some minor changes. I think the big winner, and I think the only big winner, might be President Trump, assuming they control the Senate. He campaigned hard for the Republicans running not only for governorships, but also for Senate seats. And he has rightfully should get considerable credit for his efforts in doing that, to the extent they're successful. You see, there were Republicans that rejected his help. Many of them retired. Good riddance, as far as I'm concerned, because invariably they were F Republicans. If you looked at conservative review's score, usually they were in the 30s. Some might be in the 40s. And if you don't believe what I'm saying, test me. And I would start out, let's say you're a Republican. Look at what the score is of your Republican representative or senator. Then look at the leadership. If you're a Democrat, do the same thing. Most Democrats are between 0 and 30, which means they're Fs. The majority or the overwhelming number of Republicans are also Fs. Little higher, between 30 and 60. And you might get occasionally a leader or a chair of a committee that's not a D or F, but they're invariably C. So no hope and no change. And that, I hope, explains why I'm going to do what George Carlin, the late comedian, did. He stayed home. And like he says, don't blame me. Well, I'm saying the same thing. Don't blame me. Now, really, that's not true. And I include myself in the American people. You get the government you vote for. So if you invariably vote either Democrat or Republican, why would you expect any change? You shouldn't. You're not going to see it. Ladies and gentlemen, that's what's called the status quo. And that's why the people that own this country, it might surprise you, they make campaign contributions to both parties because they want bought and paid politicians, and they invest in them. So you're going to be under the illusion that you are determining who is going to be your representative and senator by voting. Keep believing that. I no longer believe it. Sad to say, the United States of America today is an empire. It intervenes around the world, acting as policemen of the world. We're going further and further in the debt, burdening future generations, which I consider immoral, but that's what we're doing. And the leadership is simply not listening to the American people, the American worker, their voter base. This is potentially a very explosive situation. We've already seen the frictions and the uncivil behavior of people, both on the left or right. I think it's only going to get worse. And what makes it worse is people won't tell the truth. The politicians of both parties want power. They want to keep power. They want to gain power. And to do that, they will lie and they will betray the American people. And they've been doing it for many, many years. And they'll continue to do it as long as you reward them. If you reward or reinforce behavior that you don't like, well, you made the mistake. You voted for them. And I emphasize this because you have very loyal Democrats, very loyal Republicans. They've been doing this. It's sort of a bad habit. I got into that bad habit. I finally woke up in 2006 and said, what's the point anymore? It doesn't matter if you elect Democrats or Republicans. They're never going to balance the budget. They're running up debt. They're taking more and more and more resources out of the private sector. They do it through taxation and debt. And that means they're giving it to other people in the private sector or spending it on government projects. And you wonder why the economy under Obama did not grow at the historical average of between 3 to 3.5%. You shouldn't. And what happens is, as economic growth rates go down, now Trump is trying to reverse it. Good luck. But as economic growth rates, I'm talking real gross domestic product, GDP, go down. And that's what was happening under Obama's years. Who gets hurt? The people looking for a job. There are less and less jobs in the private sector, and the economy is not doing anywhere near what it could. The United States economy is perfectly able to grow at 4, 5, even 6% with the right economic policies, including the right tax policies and the right spending policy. While the president can propose whatever he wants, including balanced budgets, fundamental tax reform, when it comes to money, money bills have to originate in the House. So if the Democratic Party takes over the House, they want to spend more money, not less money. If you are compelled to continue your bad habit of voting, now don't misunderstand me. I'm not proud that I can't not voting. I'm disappointed I don't have a party or a candidate to vote for that represents my political philosophy. But that's the way it's been for over, well, now we're going on almost 180 years, 175 years. We have the two-party tyranny of the Democratic Party and the Republican Party. And I see nothing right now on the horizon that's going to change that. You decide what's the best. I know all the arguments. You're just throwing your vote away if you don't vote. I just got tired of voting for the lesser of two evils. Call me an idealist. I consider myself a rational person. I'm not a pessimist or an optimist. I'm a realist. You have to deal with reality. Wishing it won't accomplish it. That means like-minded people have to organize. People with money, resources have to fund it, and you need volunteers to. And not that they're going to be that many. We're not going to be short of people running for office, but you want the best people. And that is finally the problem. Our very, very best people don't go into politics anymore. That's just true. Not only because they're very distasteful. You saw what they did with a very good, I think, honest person, somewhat of a centrist. I'm talking Judge Kavanaugh. They trashed him. So if you're wondering why the best people don't gravitate to politics, that's Exhibit A. So it's up to the American people to stand up a new political party until the American people wake up. Many, many are awake, but you need to organize a new political party and be very clear what the principles of that party are, what does that party truly stand for, and then find people of character, integrity, to run for many offices. There's a lot of opportunity there, but right now I'm not seeing it, and I've been looking, praying and looking. So for now, we're stuck with Democratic Party, Republican Party. Don't blame me, blame yourself. Get out of the bad habit. Start to organize a new party. Thank you for listening, and now, America the Beautiful. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. With a voice of Richland College. You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by PronkPops.wordpress.com and KDUX Web Radio. WordPress.com.